What's going on, guys? Welcome to the show. Welcome back to another episode of Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network. We're talking about a classic adventure film, the only true classic film that Brendan Fraser ever actually made, The Mummy, 1999. Let's break it down for y'all. We'll see you guys in just one second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Oh, should I
play? Boom! Ow!
Ha ha!
I feel like I should, like,
Welcome
do, like, a
DJ
thing.
You can do anything you want.
Yeah, right?
News and interviews.
What's up, guys? How's everybody doing? Welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy. Here on the
still
Popcorn.
Action Movie
Anatomy. Yeah.
What is happening?
I don't know.
There's a lot.
I think we had
explosions.
Two intros playing simultaneously. Right? Which is like a parallel to Brendan Fraser's two guns.
Imhotep.
Yeah.
Imhotep is here. He's cursed us.
All right. What's up? What's up, guys? Welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy. We're talking The Mummy today on the show, breaking down the 1999 classic. And this is a classic by most people's standards. This is a movie. Yeah, right. Is it like your favorite film of all time, close to it?
It's my favorite action adventure film of all time, yes.
We're excited to have you here. That's Stacey Howard on the end of the table.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I know what you're wondering. What is a place like me doing in a girl like this?
Oh,
and it's because
it
I love this film. I'm so excited you let me invite myself onto today's episode.
We're so glad that you invited yourself. I mean, because we had you and Brianne on for The Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And this is your favorite. And then Brianne is dying for us to do Enemy of the State.
Yeah.
Tony Scott.
T. Scott. Love
so
T. Scott.
That'll obviously happen eventually.
Yep, absolutely.
But we got to The Mummy first because of the release of the new Mummy.
Yes.
Yep.
Which,
as of this morning, it's trending down right now. I'm not going to say that I read this online, but I read this online. The worst Tom Cruise film of all time is what the reviews are saying. I think that's got to be hyperbole. Have you seen Lions for Lambs? I mean, there's no way it's worse than that.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I hope not.
Well, I guarantee we're going to fucking do it on
the
show.
And we're going to love it. The one thing that's great, the best thing about it is that our expectations are even lower now.
Right.
So that we're going to just have a great time no matter what.
I saw a picture posted from Thursday night in New York where Perry from Collider was there, and she posted a picture of herself interviewing Cruise, and I melted. I was just like so jealous. I can't even imagine.
We don't even know what to say, though.
No.
We have to get older first and wiser.
To interview Cruise?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I'd be too excited.
I've got a laundry list of things to say to him.
But you don't know what order to say them in.
It's a damn good point.
It's true.
So, guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy. We talk action movies on this show here. The show is hosted by Andrew and myself, and as we already introduced, Stacey Howard. Did you already tell the folks where they could find you?
I haven't yet. No, you can find me on Twitter at SOHoward2012, and then I do a show. Can I talk about?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can talk anything you want.
Oh, fantastic. So I do a show with my co-host, Brianne, a.k.a. Miss Movies. It's called 6 Degrees of Feature Film, and we take one film and show how 6 other movies link up to it in some way, shape, or form. It's a lot of fun. You guys have been on
it's
our
really,
show.
It's a really cool show idea, and we love being on it.
Yeah, we talked about Boogie Nights and Tom Cruise movies.
Of course
we
did.
That's right, of course.
And you big surprise.
You guys should come back. We have lighting now. We're very professional girls.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Well, we had a good time, and you gave us cookies, so that was awesome.
That's true. That's very true.
And you can also find Stacey on the same platform that you can find Ben and I competing on the Movie Trivia Schmodown. She had her first solo match.
I did.
Recently, how'd that go?
I kicked ass.
She did.
I did really,
dominated.
Really good.
Her intro is also fucking epic.
Yeah.
It was sweet. Call me Snake. I mean, like, it was big time stuff.
And then her and Brianne, they have their team, the 6 Degrees girls, and they also, they're hard with their intros, like Ben and I.
Oh,
yeah. I'd say, like, they're the female version. We're trying to be them on the male version.
Brianne's teased the idea of a team up in the past.
We don't know about that.
You know.
I mean, I think eventually it's going to be you guys versus us, and it's going to be, like, battle of the over-enthusiastic costume people, and it's going to be a great time.
You should hear some of the ideas that Andrew and I have talked about for intros.
They are so absurd.
We have lists. I mean, we have spent hundreds of dollars on costumes, hours, like plotting. I mean, I want to do like choreographed dance scenes, marching bands. Not exaggerating about that.
Pretty much, if
I'll put it to you this way. Tom Cruise stars in movies and then has like a schlubby co-host or a female on screen, and every time we come up, Eddie Andrews like, "You'll be Cruise and I'll be
I'll be her."
Nicole Kidman Far Away.
Or, nice. Like, yeah, that's perfect.
I'll be Jamie Foxx holding a sandwich in Collateral.
Exactly it. This is exactly that's
Please
all I want to do.
Please just do Eyed Wide Shut where you guys or Eyes Wide Shut where
masks.
You guys yeah, just in masks and hoods Super and then creepy. Just make yeah. out a little bit and be fine.
All right. So we've got that coming up soon.
What are we even here for today? Yeah. What are we doing?
Actually, our next match is next week on June 12th. We're going to be back playing against Late to the Party. These are these guys that react to, you know, the teams that play for real. So
it's a charity event. We're doing it to help out Collider Studios.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
So.
It's the hair dye and wheelchair foundation for the Schmoes
yeah,
guys.
You Fantastic.
Know, one fan team gets to compete against a real team once a year. And we're doing that for
We feel very charitable with this match, so, you know.
Yeah, we're aren't you guys just so giving and special?
A nice exhibition to see these Late to the Party guys on screen.
All right, let's get into the Mummy, guys. So,
Action
Movie Anatomy, we have the four rules that action movies have to follow. Isn't that right, Ben?
That's correct, yes. The action movies that we cover on this show adhere to four basic rules. Those rules are rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. And definitely, Brendan Fraser in this movie is a classic action movie hero in that sense. He has all the answers. Yep. He, you know, runs the show. He knows how to get to, where are they going? Imhotep's the guy, but they're going...
Hamunaptra.
Hamunaptra.
Yeah.
Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room, and definitely Brendan Fraser and poor man's Billy Zane are the smartest people in the room. There's no doubt about it. We've all thought it. You don't have to, right? I don't have to make that joke for the first time.
I love that joke.
Yeah. rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, or political, or mercenary figure. He's sort of a mercenary... Kind of.
I mean, he's hired. He is
he's
a
like
hired
a rogue
gun.
Soldier.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a hired gun to show them where to go.
Yeah, right.
That's exactly what
guide.
He is.
He's a guide. Mm-hmm. He's a guide. He's a guide. Rule number four: the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. Definitely, he blows some shit up. He throws out a bunch of dynamite.
Blows up some. Blows almost called them zombies, mummies. I was at Six Flags yesterday.
Yeah,
and I still feel a little wild.
Off kilter, like huh?
Off kilter.
Happy birthday, man!
Oh, thank you.
Yesterday. Happy birthday.
Yeah, yesterday was my birthday.
No, we haven't talked about the movie at all yet, but we just want to keep talking about these things.
We're talking about the movie. We're getting there.
It's making witty banter.
We got in a joke about Billy Zane,
Arno Voslo.
Yeah,
yeah,
yep. I looked him up because I was unsure if it was
Billy
actually
Zane.
Just Billy Zane. But it was clearly not Billy Zane. So, guys, we start the show off every single week by watching this trailer here for the movie, and then we're going to share our thesis statements, our bold thoughts on the film. So let's get into the trailer for this film right now.
I'm excited. I haven't told you my thesis this week.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah.
In a race for the world's most advanced communications
Many
technology.
Many men have wasted their lives in the foolish pursuit of Hamunaptra.
Hamunaptra?
Most. Never returned.
Survived. That guy's a great shit weasel, too.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah,
for sure.
I found something. Oh,
it's pretty cool, that effect.
Yeah. I call it the doorway to hell.
Doorway to hell.
Oh my god.
The Book of the Dead.
You have unleashed a creature that we have feared for more than 3,000 years.
I can only see that guy as the gigolo in Deuce Bigelow.
I know. With his fish.
I can think of, yes.
I forgot about that.
This summer, Universal Pictures invites you on an extraordinary adventure. Beyond life and time.
Oh, wow.
It just
ended really abruptly.
Oh, dun, no.
There it was. Dun. I was like, there's got to be some sort of punch.
Brendan Fraser, poor man's Billy Zane.
It's a 99 trailer.
That's a weird trailer.
It was.
It ended really abruptly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I miss the days of voiceovers in trailers. Like, nowadays, it's like, oh, let's take a pop song and slow it down, you know? But, you know, in a world, I really, really miss that time.
We talk about that.
Yeah, we talk a lot about the different eras and the different voices.
Right.
And they're very distinctive. The mid-90s, the early to mid-90s is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And that's when it was really that syrupy. Like, the voice that I'm doing is the Congo voice.
Yeah.
A diamond mine of incredible
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Edge trailer is one we always like to talk about. You know, that's like, a photographer with an eye for beauty.
And you're like yes.
You're like, I'm so in the story right now.
Yes.
Keep illustrating what's going on with your voice.
And then, yeah, and like in the early 2000s, it became more like music videos.
Yeah, exactly. Much more like music videos. And that's exactly when you saw the changeover that a lot of the music video directors were then getting big films. Mm-hmm. So it made sense that they were cutting trailers the same way. It's the mid-2000s when trailers started to actually legitimize. Like,
they tried to become, like, short films.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
And I think we've been in that for a while now, where trailers, they're not intended to necessarily sell the movie as much as they're supposed to sell you feeling a certain way about the movie.
Yeah.
Right.
I think
point.
It used to really be like, we're going to show you a bunch of clips from the movie and we're going to put some exciting stuff there. And
right.
You're going to kind of get a sense of exactly what the whole movie's about. Whereas like nowadays, the first trailer for a major film can be like a couple shots with some really dramatic music.
Yeah.
And like...
Yeah, like a teaser and you don't see anything.
You don't
about
need
it.
Any lines necessarily.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we have said over and over again, and this is no longer true with Wonder Woman, but the best thing in the entire DCEU was the Man of Steel trailer too.
Yeah, absolutely.
The whole thing up until Wonder Woman. So trailers, they do something special nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. And I like always will remember Man of Steel more fondly than it actually is in my repertoire because
trailer.
Of the trailer and how good it is.
Yeah, right.
So moving on to thesis, I'm so excited.
Go this ahead.
Is, yeah.
Man.
Okay.
Jump
so a thesis
in,
statement is like a bold thought. It's a bold statement that you have. It's something about the movie that's based in hyperbole. It's not like my favorite this or this is my favorite time this happened. It's the greatest this, the most epic display of this.
The first, the last.
Yeah.
It should be at a party when the movie comes up and Stacey's like, I love The Mummy. And they're like,
yes.
Really? And they're like, let me tell you about The Mummy.
Yeah.
And you make your one point and they're like, that Stacey girl really knew what was up about The Mummy.
Yeah.
People say that a lot because I talk about The Mummy a lot.
Yeah.
So
mine is more so about me. Than it is about this film. This film is the most terrified I've ever been to watch a movie in theaters. Ever in my whole life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
For real. I love scary movies. But they don't... I'm not, like, scared to go watch them. Mm. I'm excited to go watch them. When I was a kid, I was with my buddy Derek. I've known Derek since I was a year and a half. Whatever. I can't even talk today. And his family, we were, like, on this summer camping trip or vacation, and we were like, we were going to stop and watch the movies on the way there, and they decided they wanted to watch The Mummy, and my mom had always talked up how I should not watch horror movies and how terrifying they are and they'll give you nightmares and blah blah blah. Petrified of horror movies, never watched one in my whole life, and this is the first time, because The Mummy was a horror movie when it came out. It absolutely was. And like going to the theaters at 99, I was 11 years old. I remember sitting there with like my friend. He's like, "You're gonna be okay," and I was like, "I don't do that. I don't watch horror movies." And like, I didn't want to watch. I covered my eyes even when the titles came up. Like, terrified.
Yeah.
And going back and watching it, this movie's still creepy to me. Like,
the scarabs are particularly scary.
The scarabs are gnarly and like the skin burning and getting mummified and the eyes and the tongue.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this was the most terrified I've ever been to watch a movie in theaters.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I didn't know that you felt so strongly about this film.
I did.
Yeah.
I do.
You've talked about doing this. We've talked about doing this movie on the show for a while. And early on, guys, just in case you're tuning in for the first time in a couple weeks, to clarify something, early on in the onset of the show, when we came up with these four rules, it was really about this one type of movie. And what we've decided to really expand here for the second half, the second 100 episodes, because we're on episode 102 now,
nice.
Is...
Good job.
Yeah, we're gonna allow, you know, franchise comic book films in here now. We're gonna invite more action but adventure too. You know, The Mummy is really an adventure film.
Yeah,
it doesn't have the big, you know, big tits, big guns of those 80s and 90s action movies. It feels a little different, and we're gonna allow those movies on the show more because we have now established with the audience that watches and listens to the show, you guys like what we do, and you want to hear us talk about your favorite movies, and a lot of your favorite movies aren't just, you know, Independence Day and Terminator. So there's a lot to talk about, which is why we allowed Guardians last week. We're doing The Mummy this week.
Yeah.
So, here's what I noticed about this film. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. This is definitely a movie that was around when I was a kid. And I'm sure I've seen every minute of this movie at one time in my life. Because it was on cable a lot.
Like in separate segments. Like chopped up.
I think it played on the ski bus on the way home from the mountain when I was in middle school doing ski trips and stuff like that.
Right.
But is actually sitting down and paying attention and watching the whole movie start to finish, I wasn't sure if I ever had, because there were certain moments in the movie that I wasn't very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the biggest thing I took away from it. This is the only example of a tentpole film I can think of in my entire lifetime where 20 years later, the female aged significantly better than the male.
Okay.
Rachel, I agree.
Rachel Weisz is fucking gorgeous. She is a smoke show. And she's a smoke show today. I even think a little more so than she was then. And she was a stunner.
She was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Brendan Fraser, on the other hand, like, looking at his pictures, it's not that he looks bad. It's just that he doesn't look believable as an action star anymore.
Well, you said it really well when you were like, you look at him and he's like almost 50 and like almost 20.
Yeah.
But there's just something odd.
But it was almost the same way when the movie first came out. Brendan Fraser is like a very strange action star. He doesn't, mm-hmm. He didn't really resemble the guys that we know to play roles like this, the Harrison Fords or today the Chris Pratts. He didn't have that kind of charm. He kind of had a face you wanted to punch.
Yeah,
a
he's
bit.
Got that yeah. goofy face, which is why he got famous from playing, or not, I mean, yeah, famous from playing George of the Jungle. Yeah. It was like this yeah. goofy
Encino Man. That's like
and Airheads.
Yes, yeah, right. Airheads. Yeah. He was known as that guy, which is why. Just because he got the physique from George of the Jungle,
yeah.
it was like, all right, now you're a superstar, now you're an action star.
It should be pretty telling that when you think about a guy that was in a movie as big as this, in a role like this at age 30, this was 1999, and by 2004, when he had a small part in Crash, people were like, oh yeah, Brendan Fraser used to be a star. Yeah. We'll put him as a bit part in this ensemble. That was 5 years after yeah. this. It was like, he was still like totally relevant and in his mid-30s. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how that happened, but anyway... If you look at the two of them now, I think I can't think of another example of that. Like, Rachel Weisz is going to be 50 pretty soon, mm-hmm. and watching her on screen now, I mean, she's the female lead in Bourne Legacy, and that's like mm-hmm. 5 years ago. She's in her early 40s. Like, I cannot imagine Brendan Fraser headlining any big budget action film today.
No, not at all.
I just can't see
I can't even imagine him being in a movie today. And what's so weird is, like, we were talking about when Crash came out, Brendan Fraser was still at his peak.
Right.
In time, you would think. But that was already... He was already falling off.
Right.
Like, was it the year before?
We did the thing where you were just...
What? You just said the same thing?
I just did it while you were looking at the
chat. I was reading what they were saying. Okay, my bad. We've done that a few times.
The Roxy Stryer effect.
Yeah. Well, I was sitting here, I'm like reading all these things that people are talking about and their points and their fist pumps and all that. People love this movie.
What was the joke? The old joke? Oh, it was on Edge of Tomorrow, and Roxy's like, yeah, I really edged you out. She's like, what? And Roger's like, I literally made the joke 30 seconds ago.
Yep. Thank you. We needed that.
Totally. So we were on the same page with this. It's just crazy. Brendan Fraser is an anomaly of an action star. He was totally A-list for a minute.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody could figure out exactly why, and his career totally ended up reflecting that. Whereas Rachel Weisz, it turns out, is a much better actress and totally more beautiful than she even was in this movie in her mid-20s.
She won an Oscar for The Constant Gardener. Like, yeah. She is a powerhouse. She does fantastic indie films that yep. come out all the time. She's married to Daniel Craig, so she's married to, like, an A-list actor. So yeah. She also was married to Darren Aronofsky for a hot second. I think they have a kid together. So she has relationships with famous people. She's famous herself. She is, like, a powerhouse in Hollywood.
Huge career. Well, she's that type of woman, I think, that... I mean, like, we all know being a woman in Hollywood is tough.
Yep. Yeah.
She's the type of woman, I feel like, where you look at her and you're like, that woman just worked her ass off. She worked so hard. She did exactly what she had to do. She played all the games you needed to do, and she just, like, kept her head down and was diligent.
Yeah.
And, like, you look at her, and her career has lasted for so long in comparison to a lot of women, and she's taken really good care of herself.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. not easy to do.
Both things, yeah.
Especially
absolutely.
With having kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She reminds me a lot, and I think because they look a little bit similar and because of their age and how good they are, to Marion Cotillard. She's got a lot of the same characteristics there. She played a lot of the same roles. Yeah, but she's an impressive actress. Big fan of hers. Mm-hmm. So that's my thesis statement, guys.
So cool. Let's hear it from the aficionado.
Thesis statement. I got something bold. It should be like a red lipstick. It's so bold, you guys. Here we go. The Mummy is the Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark of the 90s. This film has action, adventure, humor that is appropriate for the film and for the tone of the film. The horror genre aspect of it really brings it down to where it's not overly cheesy. It's not this ridiculous thing. It's like a fun adventure ride at Disneyland.
Right.
You know, it from start to finish, you are constantly like, that's fucking great, man. And it became a ride, yeah. Oh, and the ride's amazing at Universal, by the way. You guys should totally hop on it. It's a great time. So it's the entire family can enjoy it. Mom, dad, little brother, big sister, grandpa, whatever. You can put it on at any party and people be like, oh yeah, The Mummy. It's always on TNT at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday. And I'll be like, I'll stop and watch this for sure.
100%.
It is my favorite action adventure film of all time. I remember going to this film. You know when you guys were younger and your parents parents or your older siblings or friends would introduce you to films and say, you should watch this. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay.
Indiana
I'll watch
Jones,
Little Mermaid.
Temple of Doom. Yeah. It was exactly the same thing.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, you should do this. This is the first movie where I saw the trailer and I was like, I want to see that movie. Yeah. Mom, Dad, get in the car. We're going to the theater. I saw this movie 5 times in theaters.
Really?
I dragged my whole family to see it. I was obsessed with Egyptology after that. I was obsessed with Rachel Weisz. She is my girl crush for all time.
Yeah.
It brought me into the world of like action adventure movies. I wasn't a little Disney princess anymore. This really graduated me to, oh, big blockbuster films. Like, right. I can like these.
Yes.
I'm not a kid anymore. I'm a grown-ass little girl.
Yeah. Grown-ass little girl.
Yeah.
That's why you're on the show today.
Yeah.
That is such a great thesis. And you know what? We have a conversation that's going to, that actually is going to be perfect lead into that we're going to cover later. But I couldn't agree more, because what happened over the next 10 years is this bevy of action-adventure treasure-hunting movies came out. And The Mummy has the exact same effect. Like, you haven't seen it before, but me going back and watching it, was the same feeling. I know, like, my mom's, like, good friend growing up, her son was, like, 20 years older than me, right? And he would show me these movies. And Indiana Jones, Lost Ark, and Temple of Doom were exactly how I imagine someone would feel watching them now. Like, a kid, like a 10-year-old watching The Mummy now would be, like, kind of creeped out, but it's kind of fun and kind of campy.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
you're still like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, and then
it's a fun time.
I going back and watching it, like I told you, I was watching it, you're like, you're actually kind of scared. I was like, dude, I don't know. I love horror movies, but I think it's just because I watched this movie as a kid. I was like kind of creeped out. So, yeah, I think this absolutely is, because I think Pirates became way too Hollywoodized.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know? But I do think that Pirates was a few years later, if there was a generational break or whatever, you know, if you were.
It feels very different than this, too.
Yeah, this is much more like horror. The scares in this movie are definitely intended to be scary, where I don't think Pirates really intended to be scary at any point.
Yeah, I think it just meant it to be like quirky and weird versus this. It started off as a much smaller budget horror, legitimate horror film.
Yeah.
And then when they were kind of going over the outline, they were like, we can make this a $100 million blockbuster. Like, we can kind of change this up and throw in the action adventure in there. It was originally supposed to be much smaller, but they changed it, and they changed it well. They did good.
I mean, look, the last film directed by Stephen Sommers before he made this was Deep Rising, so I think it should be a strong sense of the kind of movie he was used to making and wanted to be making around that time going into making this, which I think is why it does have a little bit more of that scare feel to it. Let's move into our next part of the show, guys. This is Fist Pump Moment. If you watch the show, if you listen to the show, you know all about Fist Pump Moment. It's that moment you're watching the film, something happens, and you're just like, yes, I get to watch this movie right now. This is so awesome. You get so pumped up. Can be anything. Can be a moment, a line, a look, the music, whatever you want it to be. So this definitely had some sweet ones. There was, I have two. I have a funny one, and I also had, well, three really, but I already have made the Billy Zane joke, so I'll leave one off the table.
My fist pump is when I make the Billy Zane joke.
One's funny, and one is like definitely like sweet.
Yeah, I have two also.
My first fist pump is definitely when you see Rachel Weisz on the ladder in the glasses.
Yes.
Right. Just because you're like, you see her and you're like, okay, first of all, this is a She's All That moment. Mm. That's Rachel Weisz under the glasses.
Yeah.
And your hair and this outfit. Like, I know you're going to be running around with this hair later in the film and you're going to look completely different. And
you are stunning, clearly.
Yeah.
And
you
like,
ain't fooling no one.
Yeah, exactly. So that was like funny to me. But the real fist pump for me was when he's reading from the book, and then all of a sudden, shit goes wild, and the guy's like, you must not read the scripture!
Yeah.
Whatever he says.
He like wakes up.
Yeah.
You must not read from the book!
Yeah. And then you're like, and you're like, oh, it's about to go down.
Yep.
And that was pretty sweet, I thought. Mm. And that's when you see Imhotep be like,
the first time he wakes up.
Right?
Zoom in on that.
Yeah.
All right, Stace, what you got?
Okay, so my fist pump moment, and by the way, the entire film for me is a fist pump moment.
I get that.
It's
nonstop.
Yeah. This moment is amazing. But Rick O'Connell, played by the wonderful Brendan Fraser, busts through a pile of mummies to like, he swords down on Eva's chain and like lifts her free.
I love that.
And then he's like crushing mummies left and right and cuts one's heads off, and then he looks over and goes, mummies. And I said that line all the time to my parents, and it made no sense. Like, I remember I was doing dishes one day and I dropped a plate and I just looked at my mom and go, mummies. And she was like, you're a weird child. So yeah, that one for me, I was like, he is fun. He's an action adventure guy. He's a superhero right now.
Did you have a giant crush on him as a kid? Or
no? I had more of a crush on Rachel Weisz, honestly.
Right?
I mean,
of course you did.
She's better in the movie.
She's gorgeous in this film. This is the best he's ever looked. So I know George the Jungle, he had like the six-pack abs and with this little loincloth thing. I get
but he
it,
looked
but
like slow.
Yeah, he looked like he was a little dumb blonde. But in this film, he had full range of all of his like acting abilities, and he was like the hair flop
He's got the
5 o'clock shadow that they do like the match on his face. Oh no, wait, that's on his buddy's face. I remember that doing the dynamite. So yeah, that was my when he was truly like an action star wielding a sword for a hot second. It was great.
Definitely one thing that I noticed about this movie. You mentioned the guy who he did on the cheek.
Yeah,
it's something I thought about. This happens a lot in not even just 90s movies. It happens a lot like in Independence Day Resurgence. But like you throw in basically a completely irrelevant character who doesn't even necessarily have a name, who's in a lot of the movie,
right?
And he's just there to be an extra moving piece.
Right.
But the bizarre thing is that guy survives at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
yeah, and he's like a major moving part in both films.
Right.
Yeah, and like this one and the second one, more so in the second.
But if you think about that guy, he's ethnically ambiguous. He could be basically anyone from the time period. He literally has like nothing distinctive. I was thinking about guys that were in movies at the time who are those guys that just show up and everything.
Oh yeah,
like the guy in Gladiator that's got the scar on his lip.
He's still in movies all the time.
That guy,
I just
like
saw him get killed in a movie like recently.
Yeah, guys like that. What's
Guardians?
That he
just got killed in Guardians.
The guy with the scar.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
He gets pushed out into space.
That's right.
Yeah,
is that guy's name Proximo in Gladiator?
No, that's the guy. His name is Cicero.
Cicero. Yeah.
That's
sweet.
Great.
Of course I knew that. All right, so mine. Okay, I have two as well.
Okay.
That moment when they get back to like the library area and Benny's there, or back in the town, and Connell just throws the chair at him when he's running away.
Yeah, that's great.
It's just awesome.
He just dings him.
He just picks it up and just beams him.
Yeah,
it's
that was on my list too.
Great.
Yeah.
And that whole room is awesome because then afterwards he picks him up and holds him up to like this murderous fan.
Yeah.
With like this ching 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 ching. That is just a fist bump. I remember that from college. My roommate was always like, "We need that fan."
Yeah.
But my real one is. Okay, first of all, anytime the mummy, like, absorbs someone is gnarly.
Oh, it's great.
But when he does it to that poor, poor bastard who's already gotten his eyes and tongue eaten out, he's like, "He'd like to thank you for your eyes and tongue." He's like, but he does it to him again, and the scarab crawls from out his neck and through his cheek,
and then he eats it.
Yeah.
That was so awesome. I don't know why I loved it so much, but it's just because it's just so gross, and the scarabs are disgusting, and I love that
The
part.
Makeup and effects in this movie actually held up remarkably well, I thought.
Yeah.
Nearly 20 years, and I actually thought that poor man's Billy Zane, I can't remember his name. I'm not making the joke anymore. I can't remember his name.
Arno something.
Zissick or something.
Yeah.
He looks good. He looks
Arnold Vosloo.
Vosloo.
Yeah.
It's a hard name to remember.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple lines in there that were, like, the first time he was supposed to be reanimated, Rachel Weisz was supposed to say he's gorgeous.
Yeah.
But they cut that out because it would have been really inappropriate.
Yeah.
And then also the other guy whose face they keep lighting the match on, their whole race was supposed to be covered in tattoos, but the director was also like, "You're too gorgeous, we need to not cover you
just
up.
Do
a lot of beautiful men." Yeah, just little lines here, that's it.
Just do like a little tear tattoo, that's their version, I guess.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You would have done well in this film. You
would have, man.
Dark features.
Oscar Isaac would have done well, too. He would have taken my role.
He played Apocalypse. I mean,
whatever, dude. Apocalypse. Apocalypse.
All right. So that's all. We'd all our fist bump moments?
Yeah.
All fist bump moments, yeah.
Excellent. All right, guys. We're going to move into the next part of this show where we are going to do the actor breakdown, actor, actress, talk about the stars of the film.
Super
We've kind of been talking about them a bit, but Brendan Fraser, so already ranted a little bit about this, but 97 Still Breathing, 98 Gods and Monsters, and 99 Blast from the Past. I do remember Blast from the Past.
Me too.
I saw that
Alicia
film.
Alicia Silverstone.
Christopher Walken.
I think I saw Gods and Monsters also.
Sissy Spacek.
Is that the mom?
Yeah, that's the mom.
Some Which of these Gods and Monsters?
I like don't remember anything about it, but I remember the box at the video store, and I seem to remember my older sister renting it once.
I've never heard of this film.
Yeah, it's done by somebody. It's done by, like, there's somebody pretty big in it. I think it was, like, a pretty big movie. Like, there's some Oscar noms for it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Jeremy Irons got an Oscar nom for it.
Yeah. I think that's right.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
But in any case, so he was having, a pretty good career. And we talked about this already, but Encino Man in the early 90s, and then, again, in Airheads in the mid-90s. So he had been building towards this. And at the time he made this movie, he's, like, 30 or 31.
Mm-hmm.
So he had been in it. He had been in the scene working for, like, a solid 7 or 8 years. I think a little bit of him getting this role is, it's not quite the Bill Paxton Twister effect, but it's like,
oh, that's interesting.
It's like it's a shade above it because he is much more of a leading man than Bill Paxton ever was. Paxton was clearly a character actor.
How handsome he was. Ugh.
Yeah.
He's really good looking in that photo.
But like Brendan Fraser, they were like, all right, you know what? You've put in the work. You've been the funny guy. Like, the world seems to like you enough.
You got in shape. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is George of the Jungle before this or after this?
I think it's before because George of the Jungle was 98.
I think it's 98.
before.
It's before?
There, yeah, yeah, yeah. It might be 96?
96, okay.
I think so, because there's a reason I didn't... I think it's 96, actually. I'm pretty positive, because it was right before Still Breathing, and I didn't put it in, and I wanted to.
So he's, like, 96, that he's, like, late 20s, and that's obviously a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. So this is the first one where they're like, okay, we're going to kind of let you do the straddle the line, big franchise movie. And honest to God, like... We always talk about this on the show. We're talking a lot of shit about Brendan Fraser just because mm-hmm. we're kind of making fun of the guy. If you make one movie as famous as one of as this movie, yeah. one movie, you're like immortal forever.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
like, yeah, absolutely.
So few people ever do that.
You were yeah. part of something iconic and great in film,
and he was part people of a lot more than one.
Absolutely, yeah. yeah.
I mean, to be in...
When we were talking on the phone the other day, I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen this. And I realized, I was like, I've seen almost every Brendan Fraser movie from when he started to get famous.
Which is the one with Elizabeth Hurley, Bedazzled?
Bedazzled. I love that movie.
Is a guilty pleasure of mine. I like
Elizabeth Bedazzled. Hurley is
you know, you
over
there and
40
to
in that movie.
Smoke show, though.
She's amazingly gorgeous.
She looks beautiful in that film. He does like family films now. Yeah. yeah. So that's true. He rebranded himself. He's like, I'm going to I think he did one with Brooke Shields.
Yeah.
And
I liked him in Crash. Like, I thought he yeah. did a good job
good
as that part in Crash.
Crash is, in my
it's
opinion,
such a weird movie.
One of the most, like, I think at this point you can honestly say I think it's one of the most underrated films ever made. Because
I agree.
Most people hate Crash. Most people think that's a bad movie.
Did it win Best Picture?
Yeah.
yeah. See, that's why it's so hard. It's because it won Best Picture, everyone loved it, and then everyone hated it, and then now, again,
you
go back
watch
and watch it.
It.
It's not that
It has some
terrible.
Really good scenes.
Yeah.
Like, the Mark Isham soundtrack is incredible. Like, it definitely has some silly scenes, and the heavy-handedness of racism in L.A. is like, yes, that's a thing that exists. We don't like this doesn't need to win Best Picture because it talks about one really important issue.
But like, for all the people that don't live in L.A. and don't experience that kind of shit, that happens all the time.
All the time.
Like, and it's not, and that movie isn't even that extreme anymore. That movie's, you know. Anyway, moving on to Rachel Weisz, her career was much more on the rise. She did Bent in 97. She did Amy Foster in 97 as well, and I Want You in 98. I don't know any of those movies.
Yeah, well, we talked a little bit about Bent the other
yeah.
day. So Bent, if you go look up Bent, it's a foreign film about, I think, starring Clive Owen. And Clive Owen, it's in the Holocaust, and he claims to be gay to distract from the fact that he's Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So he gets like a pink, instead of a yellow band, he gets a pink band. I've never seen this, but the cast was insane. The cast is
yeah, there's a bunch of...
I think it was like Ian McKellen, mm-hmm. and like Clive Owen, and like Rachel Weisz, and there was two other like major
A-listers,
actors in the film
yeah.
that you would be like, oh, wow. And
wow,
I was like,
okay.
I don't know anything about this movie. So that was definitely a relevant one. As we said, when you watch Rachel Weisz in this movie, this is what I noticed. She's so beautiful. She's almost cartoonish. She almost
yeah.
feels like a Disney princess in
mm-hmm.
real life in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch her later in her career, even just like Constant Gardner, 7 years later,
mm-hmm.
5 years later, she looks like a real person. She's like
yeah.
grown into her looks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's more believable. So I think probably she experienced a lot of the stuff before this movie, which was people seeing her as just like
a kid.
You're too pretty. You're
yeah.
like, you're too pretty for us to actually put you in something and take you seriously. Even
mm-hmm.
in this movie, really her character is written to be pretty light. She doesn't have much depth aside from being very, very smart.
Mm-hmm.
They don't give her a lot of scenes in this movie that like
yeah.
show her range.
She does a good job of like,
yeah,
she
totally.
Does a great job of making her character more interesting than she is on paper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what you're supposed to do as an actress.
Yeah.
So there's a good actress.
Yeah,
sure. This movie made, like, it sparked an idea in my mind when I was watching it, because, again, I haven't sat down and watched this from beginning to end in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment when you first see Rachel Weisz and then you see her out in the I keep wanting to say jungle, in the desert, she is stunningly beautiful,
yeah,
right?
The, yeah.
And I think everyone
well,
in Hollywood...
She has, like, the stuff on her.
Yeah.
And she's in, like, the new outfit.
She's in, and like, I'm Indian, so I, like, look at that, and I'm like, oh, my God, you're
mm-hmm.
you're so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the rest of Hollywood agreed, and this has happened a lot in movies and in time, where you see particularly a woman, I think. I mean, it happens with men, too, for sure. But you see a female or a woman in a movie, and this moment happens. It's maybe the first time you see him, or maybe Emily Blunt, you know, stretching in Edge of Tomorrow.
Yep.
But you see them, and you're like, oh, my God, I need to know more about you. I want to watch everything that you're in. You're going to be in more movies. You're an A-lister.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You're this breakout beauty. And there's been moments in history this has happened, and I think that we should talk about them, because I think
okay.
we've all had them.
Yeah, we had a whole running thread about this, and I think we've all got some ideas for the ones that stick out to us.
Yeah.
So this is definitely one for me. Though honestly, because I didn't watch this growing up, she's not one that I remembered from that,
mm-hmm.
but totally I get it watching it now. The ones that really stand out to me that I remember, the most recent one that I'll say is Margot Robbie in Wolf of Wall Street. Because...
Right.
First of all, guys, she goes full frontal in this movie. Like, it's a Scorsese drama that was nominated for a ton of Oscars, so because of that, it seems a lot more like, well, of course, that's what the role called for.
Yeah, of course she would do that.
And of course it's legitimate. Mm-hmm. But, like, prior to that, she was basically a nobody, and that's how the world, like, got to know her, was, like, this stunningly beautiful woman. And since then, she's become one of the probably the five biggest females in the entire world.
Yeah, and if she hadn't already done Wolf of Wall Street, you could have said the same thing for Suicide Squad. Yeah. Everyone dressed up as Harley Quinn for Halloween last year.
She would never have gotten Suicide Squad without Wolf of Wall Street. She was basically, she was essentially an Australian model before Wolf of Wall Street. I know she had done some work, but like nothing that the world knew her for. So that was, she skyrocketed, you know? That was a huge one for me. I guess, should we each do our own list here?
Yeah, sure. Why don't you go through all 3 years?
My second one would be Megan Fox in Transformers.
Yeah.
07, I saw this movie. I think all of us were like, who is that?
Mm-hmm. Everyone in the whole world was like that.
Who is that? Like, she was, like, perfectly cast. Like, she was the way too hot girl next door.
Yeah.
But you just wanted to believe she was the girl next door.
Yeah, there was so... Yeah, you, like...
Living in, like, a trailer park.
Yeah,
like,
fighting. You're like... She was so beautiful, you were willing to, like, suspend your belief. Yep, she's trailer park. I could find her.
I'm so excited because now with the new rules of the show, you know, there's a new Transformers coming out in a few weeks. We're going to do Transformers 1 in 2 weeks.
Definitely Transformers 1.
Yeah.
That movie is so sweet.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, and then and my final one, because this was the girl that from the time I was like 15 till I was like 25, I was just in love with. And still to this day, working in the industry, being here in Hollywood, I have not had the chance to even see in person.
Who is this?
Keira Knightley.
Oh, you love Keira Knightley.
Pirates of the Caribbean. I had the biggest crush in the world. Like, when you talk about how you felt about this movie, like, the way you remembered it.
Right.
I was obsessed with Keira Knightley. Like, so, 100%. And I think the one thing you can say is that she had her breakout role was Bend It Like Beckham. But it's the same conversation about Tom Hardy and Bronson. People claim they saw Bronson now because he's famous, but before he was actually famous, no one saw Bronson.
Yeah.
Before Pirates, nobody saw Bennett like Beckham.
Yeah.
It was like a very small movie that a couple people had seen.
Yeah. And it was very British, too.
Totally.
Like, it was very... everything was happening in the film was, like, only Brits would kind of understand.
Yeah, I remember watching that at, like, a friend's house in, like, late middle school or early high school, and I was like, why are we watching... Oh, she's in it. That's why.
Yeah.
A couple fist pump moments that we missed was Benny praying like a weasel in various languages.
That's
awesome. Oh, that's I love that moment. Yeah. The grabbing of the crawling hand to cut the mummy. So I just want to leave people hanging there. Do you want to go with your three? You want me to go?
I'll go, I guess. I tried to stick with like action-adventure films. So I went with, of course, Sandra Bullock in Speed.
Huge one.
That's
because
excellent.
Because she was super adorable. She wasn't this like Bond, you know, goddess. She was just a very relatable woman, but she was so sincere and she was so sweet in the film, and her and Keanu Reeves had such great chemistry that I was like, I want to be that woman. I could be that woman, you know? And so she was a breakout beauty for me in that role. I also had, this is going to be a random one, but I went with Laura Dern in Jurassic Park. She's not, she's not a traditional beauty.
No, that's a great one.
But I was like, this, again, you look at, I wanted to be Dr. Ellie Sadler. Like, I wanted to be her role, and I thought she was this gorgeous, like, take charge, smart kind of woman.
Yeah, she's never a damsel in distress.
Never,
she is there because she's intelligent and qualified. Yeah, she's a badass.
She's the one that saves the day. She gets over to that house, okay, that little shed. She turns on the light. She's doing it, right?
Yep. Well, I think that there's a distinct difference, just like to add on to that point, between you have definitely sometimes you put a woman in a film, and we're just talking about women here, but the same for men, where they're beautiful, and that's why they're remembered, is that they were beautiful. And then there's also the other half of it, which is where they're capable, and they're not remembered because of how they look necessarily, but because of the character. Obviously, the perfect is when you get the combo.
But Rebecca Ferguson in MI5.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
But it's one or the other has to be really above average for the world to remember, because they also put women in films sometimes in these roles that they just fall flat. They're fine, but the world doesn't really remember.
Right.
And, you know, that's a... Bryce Dallas Howard and Lady in the Water is like
Bryce Dallas Howard in Jurassic World.
Yeah. You know? Just it doesn't sometimes it just doesn't click.
Or like I don't even know who the last Bond girl was.
The one in the fourth movie?
The one from Skyfall. I forgot. I forgot her name. I don't know what else she's been in.
Yeah, Naomi
she's
Harris
really
is
pretty.
More memorable than any of the Bond girls.
Yeah.
Movies.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Ava Green, at least in Casino, was memorable.
Yes.
And I think the Olga, whatever from the second movie, was not.
Oh, I remember Skyfall.
Kolyanka or something.
Like, yeah, I can't remember her name though.
And what about Spectre? Who was the girl in Spectre?
It's the daughter of Mr. White or whatever. She's like Russian looking and.
Oh yeah. The blonde from Mission Impossible.
Yeah, she's also in Mission Impossible 4 for sure.
Is that all of yours?
I had my last one. I put Gina Carano in Haywire. Just because I had no idea who she was before that. And I know they took her and they were like, this is a beautiful, strong woman who is like an MMA fighter. Yeah. And they just made a movie for her.
Interesting.
And so to me, that was a breakout beauty because it's not like she was a known actress before that. It's just one movie. You get to be in it because of everything you're capable of individually.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I was not aware of that. But I know Soderbergh likes to take his chances with his leads like that.
Yeah.
So I've got a handful here, and I'm gonna list some of the ones that you guys didn't. I think Jolie and Wild Things is a big one.
Yeah,
Ellen Page and Juno.
Yeah,
nice.
Catherine Zeta-Jones and Zorro. That's like my mom's favorite.
It's a big one.
Really?
Daisy Ridley and Force Awakens and Rebecca Ferguson and MI5. Those are like the other ones we missed. But my three that I have are, oh man, this is so hard. All right, so I have to go Gal Gadot in Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. I know that's crazy because. You'll say Batman versus Superman.
Well, I mean,
and
so
Fast and Furious.
Some people would say Fast 7, which I don't think is fair because
she's in it for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, if she's not Wonder Woman, people don't remember that role. I would still say Batman versus Superman, but I hear what you're saying.
So I know you haven't seen Wonder Woman yet, but I feel you on that.
Yeah.
She is magnetic, mesmerizing. Like perfect in this movie.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, like, it's been so long since I've watched a film where I'm just watching it and I can't help. Like, I almost feel like a creep watching it because I'm, like, so in love with her throughout it. Like, I haven't felt that in a movie in a long time other than these other two.
And you were, like, relatively skeptical going into it.
No. Relatively is an understatement. I thought this movie was going to suck.
Yeah.
And I did not want to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, I just didn't.
The world convinced you, though.
The world convinced
me. The positive reviews.
I was going to watch it no matter what. Yeah, I just didn't really want to. It was fantastic. Okay, so these next two. Rachel McAdams in The Notebook.
Nice.
I am still in love with Rachel McAdams.
Which is a really interesting one, because it's the same year as Mean Girls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think she became iconic in a way for The Notebook, that even though Mean Girls was just really as big of a movie at the time.
Well, it was like she went from one iconic role to the next so quickly, and I think Regina George was skyrocketed by... The Notebook.
Mm. Yeah, I think
if you were to do the career-defining role, it would be Regina George for her, I think, right?
McAdams, at this point?
I'm going to say it's The Notebook. And I also say that's Ryan Reynolds... Ryan Gosling is also the breakout beauty of The Notebook.
Definitely. Yeah.
They're both breakout beauties in that film.
He's in Remember the Titans. Like, this movie, that was when I was like, who is that dude? I fell in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last one, dude, this is the greatest... Everyone remembers that moment when Cameron Diaz walks in from the rain in the mask.
Such a mess.
Oh, I watched that and I just was, like I was telling you guys before the show, I was like old enough but young enough to where I didn't know what was happening, but something was like, I love you.
That one I distinctly remember. I remember being in a theater and just being like, oh my God, that's what a movie star looks like.
Yeah.
I was watching with my mom at her boyfriend's house at the time, and I still, like, how do I don't remember the other two times I saw it. You know, like these other two, I mean, Gal Gadot was last 3 days ago, but I don't remember the first time I watched The Notebook.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Mind blowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember the first time I watched Pirates, but
All right, guys, so if you have your breakout beauties, feel free to throw them in the chat or get at us at AMA Podcast. We'll take a look at them. Let's get on to how this movie was made.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So yeah, I'll start with Stephen Sommers, who wrote and directed the film. Sommers is one of these guys, you and I have talked about these on the show a lot, where if you met this guy at a party and he started telling you about what he'd done in his career, you would be fascinated and you would go and you'd be like, I talked to this guy who directed these movies and wrote all these incredible things. You've seen all these movies. But then if you sat down having a conversation about like the great directors or the great writers, he wouldn't even sniff the conversation.
No.
But it's just bizarre when you think about that. He has a big career. I mean, he came out... He went to USC School of Cinematic Arts for 3 years. He got a master's degree. He raised money after his short film Perfect Alibi to make his next film, Catch Me If You Can, which sold for $7 million at Cannes. His next few years were like a hodgepodge of working as a staff writer at Hollywood Pictures. He wrote the screenplay for Gunman and for Tom and Huck. Then he directed... The Adventures of Huck Finn and the live-action Jungle Book in 94.
I noticed that he, like, loves that, like, Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, I think it's probably because he got hired to write the one and then directed the other.
Mm-hmm.
But,
which I
like,
watched.
Yeah, I was reading about it after that film sold for $7 million. He was broke a few years later and, like, searching for work, and that's when he did these projects of writing. And then it's, like, really in the mid-90s where he's developing the script for Deep Rising, but then even Deep Rising completely flopped. It made $11 million on a $45 million budget. So, like, that's the year before The Mummy.
And did he already have a contract?
He was a guy that was kicking around that knew a lot of people. Clearly, he had worked a lot. He had written stuff. He had directed stuff. pretty agreeable guy. He was young enough. He was in his 30s at that point, mid-30s. And they were like, yeah, take a crack at this mummy thing. And I think this one's really interesting because we're talking about when this movie was made. And I know all of us are going to talk a little bit later in the show about kind of other things in the genre that came after this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they had opened the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland like a couple years before this. Mm-hmm. So they were like, take a shot at this. This Brendan Fraser guy, he was George of the Jungle. You know, we're going to make this kind of horror adventure remake of this old 1931 film, but we're going to make it totally updated.
Yeah.
And The Mummy's just a huge hit. Now, if you look at what he did afterwards, it's not like his career really took off. No. He made The Mummy Returns in 01, and then he did G.I. Joe, Rise of the Cobra, and Van Helsing.
And now it's like he has one movie in production, right?
Yeah, and he's in his 50s. Like, he'll probably make another big movie. He didn't even direct the third Mummy film. When they did that third one,
Tomb of the Dragon
Emperor.
I never watched that one.
It's bad. Rachel Weisz doesn't come back. Who cares? I love Maria Bello. Love her. Don't get me wrong, but she is not
Evie. You can't just replace
Rachel Weisz.
Yeah.
Is Evie. Come on.
And that's pretty much his career. So he wrote and directed this, but I mean, it's sort of like the most remarkable, unremarkable career I can think of. Mm. Made a lot of money, made a lot of movies that a lot of people saw, yet, like, if you were to say Stephen Sommers a great director or writer, I'd be like, he's, like, above average, I guess.
Well, I think from the time we grew up, you heard his name a lot.
Yeah,
I would agree. I think you did. Because, like, hearing his name, Stephen Sommers, I was like, oh, we're covering him on the show this week. Maybe he's definitely done a movie we've covered before.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, he hasn't, huh? Okay, well, let me go look at what he's done. And I was actually kind of... I was relatively surprised to see that his resume was as short as it was, his filmography was.
He's the guy that if like, Stacey was coming, she's like, yeah, actually, I got a job interning at Stephen Sommers' production company. We'd be like, Stephen Sommers? Be like, yeah, I did the Mummy movies and G.I. Joe. We'd be like, oh, that's a big deal. Congratulations, that's huge. Yeah. That's a really big deal.
And it would be. And it would absolutely be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy how Hollywood's like that.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, that's pretty much, he wrote and directed it, so he's involved in most of the creative on this film. Aside from that, you have James Jackson and Sean Daniel as the major producers on this. Now, we covered them pretty extensively on the Tombstone episode.
Right.
But they launched Alphaville Films in like 1992. Actually, Tombstone was not even done by Alphaville, which is funny because it's right in the heart of it. But it just,
when it was getting made.
Yeah, and they both worked for quite a while. James Jax passed away in 2014 due to a heart attack at 66. And Sean Daniel continues to make films with a different production company now called the Sean Daniel Company. It's an independent company. He is actually producing the new Mummy film, well as 2016's Ben-Hur remake, which was a bit
that
of
love
a
fest.
So my question is if you start with Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Director winner Ben-Hur, correct? And you step down to what happened with this Ben-Hur?
Yeah.
And you start with The Mummy in 1999. Don't get me wrong. I love The Mummy. But, like, if you take that big of a step down with Ben-Hur, what's going to happen in The Mummy? You know?
You just never... Well, it seems like we do know now. But you'd never know. Because if you look at the stuff that he did in his career in the middle, the stuff the stuff
some
that made him famous.
Stuff in there.
Huge. I mean, Animal House, Coal Miner's Daughter, Blues Brothers, Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, Fast Times, Brazil, Field
Uncle
of
Buck.
Dreams, Do the Right Thing, Back to the Future, Out of Africa, Best Picture winner,
Midnight Run,
Born on the 4th of July. Huge movies. The guy's career in the 80s and 90s was massive. But he just, in the last few years, hasn't done a lot. Tomb of the Dragon Emperor was him and The Scorpion King. So we'll see what happens. I mean,
Hollywood's tough, man. It's really tough to figure out like what the audience is doing, and
it's a wave. There's very few of these producers or guys at production companies that get to do this. That get to have like high, huge low, another huge high. Mm-hmm. It usually is a wave. It's like this, and then maybe you get lucky and one kind of brings you back up, but it doesn't. You don't just skyrocket.
Yeah, and then a lot of them, they end after decades.
Yeah,
look, when decades end, when movies change and audiences change, they end. But they hit this one at the right time. So moving on to critical and box office, this movie was produced by Universal. It only cost $80 million to make, which is pretty impressive with the CGI and the makeup and how it all holds up and the sets. It was released in May of 1999, so it was almost a summer movie. And it grossed $155 domestic with an additional $260 million worldwide for a grand total of $415 million. When the movie opened, the day of, Summers got a call saying, we need another one.
Yeah.
So here's the question, guys. The Indiana Jones ride opened in the mid-90s, and Cutthroat Island had opened in 95, one of the biggest flops of all time in a treasure-hunting movie.
Oh, yeah.
This is 99. Why did this movie make $415 million worldwide? What was it about this movie that the world wanted? Brendan Fraser wasn't like somebody that I would have bet my career on at that point.
I don't think it was because of either of them, honestly.
Rachel Weisz was a nobody.
I think it was because the movie was fucking sweet.
Yeah.
I watched that movie in theaters and I was blown away. I told everyone about it. And this is 99. This is before social media. So this was just like, tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know how good this movie is. But still, I don't really have a right answer. I don't really have a real answer other than it was just a good movie that made money.
Mm-hmm. I think this was the 7th highest grossing film or the 8th highest grossing film of the year that year.
Nice.
What do you think, Stace?
Here's the thing. When did Raiders of the Lost Ark come out?
79?
79. What's 99, 20 years later?
Yeah.
Who gets older? The kids that watched it. So, again, the 90s are coming back
That's
now.
Interesting.
Every 20 years, you have a trend of, I love everything from my childhood. I want it again because I can afford to invest in it. I can go now. I don't have to take my parents. You know, I can do it. And so, I think, honestly, I think that's what it was. You wanted adventure again. You're now an adult. That little kid wants to feel the same way, except you have the resources now, so.
Yeah, and like what we were talking about earlier when she said her thesis, it's like all the people that loved Indiana Jones in theaters as kids, now they're taking their kids and their like little brothers to go see it.
We've got Marissa Serafini up in the booth. What's going on, Marissa?
Hey, Marissa.
Hi, Marissa. Hello, guys.
Did you watch this movie in theaters?
I did not watch the movie in theaters, but when it came out on VHS back in those days, I watched it so many times.
So you love this movie. Do you have any insight to share on why you think this movie made so much money and did so well?
I think also the visual effects back then, especially, technology has improved so much, but even with the sand mouth and attacking, you know, and like going after...
The sand mouth is sweet.
Oh, it was great.
And the aircraft, you know, that's something that hasn't been seen before on screen.
Yeah, so I mean, this was really innovative.
The visual effects were pretty, you know, high grade at that time.
Yeah, it was pretty groundbreaking. Would you mind doing me a favor and checking on Raiders? I think it's 79, but I'd be curious to know if I'm off on that.
And then, like, even with, I think someone just said it's 81.
Oh, so maybe 80. Well, again, close.
Yeah.
Close in that time period.
It would make sense if it was 81.
I think it's, again, it's that trend, it's that cycle that comes back, you know? So that might have been, and also, like you said, it was just a kick-ass movie.
It was just like a good, scary movie. And funny, but, like, the scarabs were... The scarabs were terrifying.
They ate you alive.
Yeah, they go underneath your skin. You run into walls. Mm-hmm. Horrible.
Is that 81? I'm blind.
It's
81.
Okay. So anyway, yes, I'm still. I don't quite understand why it was as successful as it was, but again, the 90s was a different time. People wanted something else out of movies. It's not always about the star. I think what you guys are saying is correct. The visual effects in the trailer did look pretty awesome. The sand mouth was really cool, and that stuff holds up well. In the same way that like. The effects in T2 hold up really well. The liquid, the T1000 still looks pretty good.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. So
I mean, I wonder if it's the same thing that we were talking about with like John Wick. Like since John Wick was done right and it came out at the right time, it didn't need to be Keanu. I don't think so. It could have been any other. It could have been Christian Slater, maybe. You know what I mean? Like it could have been just some old super like action superstar. In a great movie that was made the right way at the right time.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a really good point. So, as we mentioned when this film came out, so let's talk about this genre over the course of the next sort of decade.
Okay.
Like, what this movie did, because I think it's really interesting. We were all kind of going around the table beforehand about, because of, you know, that Indiana Jones ride open, and there was so much pageantry around the sort of treasure hunting genre, this came out in 99, spawned a sequel 2 years later, but it wasn't the only film. I mean, the next few years were littered. And so we've collectively kind of come up with a top five here to count down of movies in the sort of treasure hunting action genre from the next decade. Before, I think now the genre's a little more tired, but, you know, back then it was like a big, exciting thing. They were like, oh, The Mummy, we'll take a chance. Oh my God, it made all this money. Let's make a sequel. And how much more mileage can we get out of this?
Yeah, it was the same thing that happens like when, you know, disaster movies have their thing. And then, you know, superhero movies have their thing. This was the time for like action adventure. And it spawned, you know, National Treasure, Tomb Raider, Pirates of the Caribbean, Sahara. What are some of the other ones we have on there?
Yeah, some of the honorable mentions that didn't make our list in the end. The animated Road to El Dorado. You have 10 years later, you have the fourth Indiana Jones, Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls, which I have to think went into production around probably was going into production a couple years after the sequel to this film. You know, you had a couple pirates, the sequel to this movie. So I say we count down and start with number five.
Okay. Yeah. What do we agree on?
The Da Vinci Code? Can we all agree that's a pretty good movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where I think hindsight is a little off-putting, because when that movie came out, it was like the biggest movie in the world.
It was exciting.
The books were huge.
The book had been like the book.
Yeah.
Yep. And then it was like, Tom Hanks is in the Dan Brown book about, so...
I know, but isn't it weird to think about the fact that even... I remember this coming out in 06. Even just by 2006, the Tom Hanks brand was not what it had been 5 years earlier. Because I remember him coming out in this movie and thinking, I'm kind of excited for this, but I'm also like, I don't know if I really buy this or care that much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I feel like everyone's dad was excited for this because everyone's dad reads Dan Brown books.
Yeah, everyone's dad loves Tom Hanks.
Yeah, oh my gosh, they love him. My mom loves him. He's America's dad.
This is an interesting list that I just realized. Every single one of these franchises end up just running themselves into the ground.
Yeah, all of them.
Didn't they?
Just about, yeah.
So what's the next one?
Next up we have Mummy 2, the sequel, 2001.
The Mummy Returns.
Which a lot of people say is better than the first, or they like it more than the first. But it's one of those where the first two are held in very high regard, whereas the third one is like, I didn't even watch it. You said it was bad.
Yeah, it wasn't good, and it just wasn't interesting, and Rachel Weisz didn't come back, so I was like, I don't want to see that.
Yeah, no one wants that. No one wants like one of the most exciting things of the franchise to just be gone all of a sudden.
So
yeah.
When did the Scorpion King show up? Which one's he's in? He's in the second one or the third
one?
He shows up in the second one.
Yeah. He's like the bad guy in The Mummy Returns, and then he gets his own film, and he's the good guy now.
Yeah,
and
they're both bad.
Like, it's like a prequel to The Mummy Returns, but.
He's bad in The Scorpion King. Yeah. There's two of them.
I think there might even be more, honestly.
There's like five Scorpion Kings.
So many of these movies. First two were great. The Rock is actually pretty cool in the second one, but it just, again, kind of goes downhill.
Number three, we have National Treasure. Nick Cage's really last movie star movie, I think. Where he was taken very seriously at all. People liked this movie, 2004. Mm-hmm.
Those movies made so much money.
Yeah.
The first two. And I think it's, again, the same thing, where the first two were actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And the third one was just garbage.
But there's a third National Treasure?
Isn't it? The
Book of Secrets is the second one.
Book of Secrets is the second one. I don't think there's been a third one.
Is there
one.
Not?
I think
is there a third one in production?
I think there's in production, maybe.
You would think at this point that they would have pushed out a third movie.
I could have sworn
and that would be
something
and Nick
else.
Cage would be like, yes!
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 Thank God! This is when I first saw Diane Kruger, because I hadn't seen Inglourious Bastards was after National
Holy
Treasure,
shit.
Right?
That's another one to add
That's
to our
another
list.
Breakout beauty.
Yeah.
Yes.
She is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, who is this woman?
And talented.
Yes.
Number two,
and
we
talented.
Have we have one of Andrew's favorite films of all time, The Count of Monte Cristo.
I love that butter. That movie is phenomenal.
It's really good.
And it's so good, and it's kind of tough because it's not really based on, like, treasure hunting.
It's before Jim Caviezel was Jesus.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. But it is about a massive treasure, and he uses it to find his revenge, and it's action-adventure. I mean, honestly, on the list, that's my favorite movie.
What's the cast of the movie? Anthony Hopkins, Jim Caviezel, and Guy Pearce?
Wait,
Henry
Anthony
Cavill.
Hopkins is in it.
Anthony Hopkins is not in this movie?
No, it's Richard Harris. Harris, yeah, Guy Pearce, Henry Cavill, and Jim Caviezel.
What's the around the same time that has Anthony Hopkins? Oh, is that Mask of Zorro?
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. I'm mixing that up.
Which actually could be on that list, too.
Is that treasure movie?
No.
No.
But it is about, that's what the villain is doing.
Have you not convinced me to do Mask of Zorro on the show yet?
I think we'll do it eventually. I think, honestly, I've thought about this a lot. I think the biggest thing is I'm worried to go back and watch it and not enjoy it.
Right.
I remember that movie so fondly
that
I don't want to, like, watch it and have that thing with, like, Independence Day.
Yeah, right.
Where I'm like, God, this movie sucks.
I just remember, like, the Z, and she's like, I remember that. That's so all beautiful. I remember. And she was so gorgeous. Yeah. I remember being like, I want to be a beautiful woman like that when
my
I grew
mom
up.
Still to this day, like I said, she thinks she was Catherine Zeta-Jones in The Mask of Zorro is the most beautiful a woman has ever been in her life. Like, for my mom to see.
Mm-hmm. What year, here's a piece of trivia for you guys, I don't know the answer to this. What year did The Phantom come out? That also, doesn't that start?
I love that movie.
It's starring Billy Zane, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it 98? Is it earlier?
I think it's before Titanic? Or no. Oh, shit. I don't know.
I don't know.
I'd say 98 or 99 sounds right.
98 sounds right to me.
I'm gonna look it up.
But I just, like, for some reason, just thought of that movie.
Have you seen that? Have you guys seen that movie?
The Phantom?
Yeah.
He has the ring, right?
Yeah.
Sweet ring. I got the ring from McDonald's. They had it in the Happy Meals. I wore it a lot.
96.
96.
There's a part with a microscope that has blades stick out.
Yeah.
And blinds people. And that, whoa. I remember, was... It still bothered me.
I don't think it's a good film, though.
It's not. It's very bad.
I was confused The Phantom with Darkman. For some reason, in my mind, I always, like, interchange
Darkman
those.
With the... Yeah.
And Phantoms.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
So our number one on our list, I think this one kind of trumps all of them because of its massive, massive success.
Yeah. Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl.
Yeah.
the first one. And it, funny enough, there were options to put other Pirates films in the same span. You could have put the sequel, but the second one isn't good.
Mm. It's not as good.
Yeah. The second one, I think, is kind of
Kind of like Bill Nye. Bill Nye.
Yeah. Like, I think that franchise it was kind of like this. I think they were like, all right, so we've got this whole adventure thing that worked out with the Mummy, so let's go ahead and make this Disneyland ride into a movie, and we'll get Johnny Depp. And then Johnny Depp's like, okay, I'll take your ridiculous idea and I'll get an Oscar nom for it, because I'm that good of an actor.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow, incredible. This was a great idea, it turns out. Let's make four more.
Just ride this forever.
And it's like, hasn't ended.
And then you look at it and you're like, well, actually, it was a terrible idea. You just happened to get a transcendent performance from your leads, so now you think you could make more
which
movies.
Now you've ran that performance into the ground where no one cares anymore about Jack Sparrow. It's just it's almost like you feel bad for Johnny Depp.
I know. His career is defined now by like a Disneyland ride.
I mean, that guy has some of the most. He played Willy Wonka, he played Edward Scissorhands. He will always just be Jack Sparrow at this point.
Totally.
Marissa, you saw the most recent Pirates, right?
Actually, I have not.
Oh, you haven't?
Oh, you didn't see it.
Oh, I thought you did it on Anatomy.
We did.
Gotcha. See, I actually want to see it just because of Javier.
Yeah,
but I won't pay to go watch it.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, so moving on to critical reception. This movie's got a 7.0, which is still strong. And I think the Rotten Tomato scores kind of
what our show's all about.
Exactly. Yeah, it's 57% from all critics, 44% from top critics, and then 75% from the audience, which that's a good score.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty good score. I think it means, well, it holds up, and it was nominated for Best Sound.
Classic, in classic always. 90s fashion,
yep.
The most successful action films always have at least one technical Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
Every time.
They just want to give them something so they can get a ticket to the ceremony.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't get one for visual effects.
I agree.
I thought they would have got that over sound.
The Matrix probably got it in 99.
Definitely. Yeah. All right, guys, this is a good one. Moving on to our favorite line. Favorite line.
All right, so I think I tweeted this earlier from our account, right?
You have mine. So let's let Stacey jump in with hers.
Ahead. Well, mine is, you guys have already said it, and I need to lean away from the mic to do it. No! You must not read from the book!
Yes.
Sorry, that was so loud.
No, it was perfect.
And then the Mummy comes to life, and it goes, and the entire movie is then kicked off.
It's
so,
kicked off, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the other one, too, though. When you open the show.
Yeah.
With a place like this, doing Girl Like Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if she's like, I'm a librarian.
Yeah, and she's so cute.
She's such a cute
drama. I love her.
Mean it.
I mean, my favorite lines were the Benny reciting in all the different languages.
Yeah, right,
so
right.
good. And then I love that he holds up the last one. He's like, I could use you.
Yeah.
He's like, ah, ah. Benny is great in There Will Be Blood.
Yes, he plays the brother.
Oh, does he play the brother?
He's the shit weasel brother. Yeah, I will always remember that.
God, about that. So my favorite line is when our boy with the... on his cheek, who's the character name.
I'm sorry.
ethnically ambiguous.
Deuce Bigelow, male gigolo, supporting actor.
Yeah. The line is, this creature is the bringer of death. He will never eat. He will never sleep. He will never stop.
Yeah. Anytime anything doesn't eat or sleep until it's done killing you is terrifying.
Solid. It's a solid villain qualifier.
Works
really well.
And he doesn't have to eat or sleep. That's what's also terrifying.
Well, he eats some people. He's got to eat people.
And he eats that scarab.
That's right. Comes through his cheek.
So he does have to eat.
The scene when he's kissing Rachel Weisz in the bed is pretty creepy, too.
Ooh. Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And his face starts to decay, and then she wakes up, and then Brandon Fraser pops in, and he's like, get your ugly face off her! Let's just react the whole movie, you guys.
Right?
Let's just remake it.
I'm Benny.
Is this rated PG or PG-13?
13.
Yeah. Scary.
And do you think that it has something to do with the fact that the woman in the beginning is basically just naked?
Oh my god, you see your boobies!
She's basically just body painted?
The hair is over the nips. You don't see the nips because the hair is just right there.
Yeah.
My dad used to...
She's gorgeous.
She's beautiful. My dad used to make fun of me because in the 90s, there was still like a big figure skating movement going on.
Yes.
And so there was a figure skater called Oksana Bayul.
Yeah.
And my dad used to make fun of me and be like, Oksana Bayul. And I was like, that's not even pronounced it, Dad! I got so mad at him.
But she was your favorite figure skater.
For sure.
That's who that was? That was Oksana Bayul?
No, it wasn't. But just like the name sounds like it.
Gotcha.
It might as well have been. I haven't seen her in anything else, but she's great. She's so fantastic.
Yeah, she's good in the second one. But yeah, you're right. It is just body paint. She's basically completely nude.
Reminds me of one of those Sports Illustrated covers from the 90s.
Yeah. Where they paint on the bikinis.
Uh-huh.
That's
And it was somehow okay for kids to,
My brother had those. I don't know why I remember that.
they have to dub or cover that up on TV. They put like a bikini on her on TV.
Really?
Yeah.
She's wearing like a CGI bikini?
That's what it says, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I don't remember seeing it. It might have only been like in the 90s or like early 2000s.
I was definitely surprised when she walks in the scene where I was like, wow, I thought this was kind of a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. I don't remember her being just naked at the beginning of it. So, anyway, guys, that's my favorite line. Did we all share our favorite lines here?
Yeah.
Because we had the same one.
Yeah, we did, and I had another one.
Benny. So, the next section that we don't do very often anymore, but I think this is funny because it's funny. The remake of this movie stars Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And people say that it's not a remake. We've been saying it's not a remake.
Mummies.
It's a remake. It's a reimagining. Yeah. I guess it's not a remake of the same story, but it is because it's just, it's a mummy.
Yeah.
And it's
a guy that found it and like, yeah.
So it's, I mean, I guess it's a remake of the original Mummy.
Yeah.
Again.
Which I actually love that it's a female mummy. Yeah. That makes
me
it
too.
So much more interesting.
And I like Sophia Batello, is that her name?
Yeah.
She's stunning. Fantastic.
And such a badass.
Another breakout beauty.
Kingsman. Yes, absolutely.
Kingsman. But what if this film had been remade and they, because it already seems like a horrible idea to remake this movie.
Mummies.
Yeah. What if Cage had started it? What if they'd be like, Cage, you're going to get another shot at a big franchise film, but no actor wants to take this part, so we'll give it to you. He's like, yes,
I can do this. Benny. What are some of the great lines that Connell says in this?
Oh, God.
You know some.
Oh, gosh. It's always... I remember some of Benny's lines. It's like, think of my children. You don't have any children.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
don't
that's
have any children. You don't have any children. Tom, you don't have any children, Benny.
Yeah,
you don't have any children, Benny. Man, I'm nervous now.
Cruise?
I really am.
Yeah, it's sad. It makes me really bummed out. It's just because we only get one Cruise movie a year for the most part. So, and Jack Reacher 2 really sucked.
Yeah.
Oh, did it? I didn't see it, but I loved the first Jack Reacher.
But I will say this, and we tweeted this, and we went to the Facebook page. And guys, if you're not already on there, go join the Facebook fan page for Action Movie Anatomy. Several of the fans of this show started it, and it's actually been like filling up with people in the conversations. Yeah. We had tons of people chiming in on stuff. It's really fun. Yeah. You can, follow along the conversation there. But I posted the trailer for American Made. Did you watch the trailer for this, Stacey?
I didn't.
It looks awesome.
It's Doug Liman's next movie starring Tom Cruise.
Whoa.
About Barry Seal, a helicopter pilot in the 80s, smuggling drugs, guns, and whatever for the CIA, DEA,
that
and Pablo
amazing.
Escobar at the same time.
It's like classic Cruise in like wrong situations.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It looks like drug movie 101 a little bit, but like starring Tom Cruise as like kind of not like the most honest
guy. It's like War Dogs with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, it looks sweet.
Oh, okay.
It looks totally awesome. If you haven't watched the trailer, guys, go look it up. American Made.
We'll try to cover it on the show. I don't think we'll be able to, but we'll try.
Oh,
it's got to be action, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's Tom Cruise. We can do whatever
it's
we
Tom
want.
Cruise.
I'll watch it.
Make an exception. So there are three action movie categories, guys. There are totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate movies. Totally ridiculous movies are like Con Air and Face Off and The Fifth Element. The Fifth Element's not really it. Demolition Man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We just really laugh and think they're silly, and they're entertaining for sure. We love them, but you know, they don't really hold together dramatically. Totally legit movies are like Lone Survivor and like
T2, Gladiator,
The Fugitive, and then the middle category, which is a lot of the movies we do on this show, and that's like which we're held together by like one really really compelling performance,
The Rock,
or a great some piece of the movie that like it grounds it, but you do laugh unintentionally here and there, like in Predator and Point Break.
Yeah.
And which of the three categories do we think this movie fits into?
I want Stacey to go first on this.
I think this one's an easy one. It has to be ridiculously
legitimate. It's easy. It's totally legit. I would have loved it.
No, the thing why I love this movie so much is that I recognize the camp and the cheese in it.
Yeah.
But there are other elements of the story and of the movie that ground it. And so it's just a fun time for me. So it is a legitimate film. It's well made. It's fun. It made a huge amount of money. It has great stars in it. And there's some camp and some silly parts in it. And, you know, he goes up on, like, a little pulley like it's a legitimate ride in a theme park. So I have to go with ridiculously legitimate.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I was thinking it might be totally ridiculous, but, like, you're in their world. This is a world where mummies were brought back to life from reading out of the Book of the Dead, and the Book of Life is over there, and, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely goofy and Benny, but it's pretty self-aware of its goofiness when we talk about that. And yeah, I think it's totally ridiculously legitimate because I don't think a totally ridiculous movie would make me feel nerves, make me feel anxiety.
You know, I'm right on the edge of it, but I think I'm going to go totally ridiculous because I think it's because I didn't watch it as a kid, so I don't have that attachment to it like
it's
guys
definitely
have.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Where watching it, it was like, I could appreciate all of the tropes that are in action movies that I like, and there was a lot of things about it I was excited to talk about on the show, and there was moments that were sweet, but I also, the movies that are in the totally ridiculous category, like we mentioned, Face Off and Con Air, those movies are full of things that are totally sweet.
Yeah.
So it's not like, it doesn't mean bad, it just means I laugh a lot, and I'm like, this most of it's pretty
this
silly.
This is a total movie.
I think this movie was pretty ridiculous. It's on the edge for me because I do think the scares are legitimate, and I think the scarabs are still pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But the campiness, I don't think aged as well as it could have, and for me, it puts it in the ridiculous category.
For sure. I definitely agree that if you would have watched it when it came out, I think you would be saying something else right now.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Cool. Fair enough. All right, guys, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. There's only one last thing to talk about, and that's going to be the pitch. Didn't see that coming, did you, Stacey?
No, I did. Oh, jeez. Oh, jeez.
So, guys, we talked about it a little earlier on the show, but we're going to do Wonder Woman next week.
We're going to do it.
We're a week behind. I know every single publication in the world has talked about it, but we haven't yet.
Yeah, and we're going to do it better than everyone else.
And it's sweet, so that should be fun for us.
Yeah, Ben hasn't seen it yet. I watched it. I absolutely loved it, and I want to talk about it before no one cares anymore. So we're going to do that next week on the show. We might even have a guest. We'll see if we can make that happen.
Ooh. Yeah, we've got ideas.
Yeah.
We have schemes. So, yeah, guys, that's the show for the week. If you guys want to follow along in the conversation, I mentioned the Facebook fan page. That one's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You can follow any one of us on Twitter. Where can they find you, Stacey?
At SOHoward2012.
And they can also follow you on the 6 Degrees of Podcast. When does that play again?
We do it every Wednesday morning, 10:30 a.m. PST.
Do you stream or do you guys pre-tape?
We stream. So we are on, you can log on to YouTube Live and you can get along in the chat. So yeah, it's a fun time.
Also, Stacey's debut singles match on the Schmodown played last week.
It came out Friday. So it's on Collider's YouTube channel.
Dominates.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I kick ass. I really do.
She's got a great character, a great performance.
So watch their show on Wednesdays and then just stay on your computer and watch our show.
Our show on Wednesdays, right?
You guys can find me at Andrew Guy on Instagram and Twitter.
And you guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. You can find the podcast at AMA Podcast on Twitter. Again, more interaction there, and the Facebook page, which has been a blast. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you same time, same place next week for Wonder Woman. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.